You are listening to the Vorpal Chainsword Podcast, a podcast where I interview guests about D&D, miniatures, wargaming, comic books, movies, game conventions, and other nerd-related paraphernalia. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. Hi, and welcome to the Vorpal Chainsword Podcast. Today, I'm fortunate to have composers Vince Ticola and Kenny Meredith on the line. As far as iconic soundtracks go, Vince is responsible for the music scores for the 1980s movies Rocky IV and Transformers. And more recently, Kenny and Vince have been creating fantastic video game music and scored the soundtracks for Saturday Morning RPG and Angry Birds Transformers. Welcome to the Vorpal Chainsword Podcast, Vince and Kenny.
Hi, guys.
Hey. So I wanted to first talk to you guys about, I guess we'll start from what your most recent releases actually, and then maybe we can talk about Rocky and Transformers, but I really want to talk to you about Saturday Morning RPG and Angry Birds Transformers. And now Angry Birds Transformers just came out in October of last year.
Correct.
Is that right?
That's right. Correct.
Yeah. And so you guys started out doing movies and then you moved into video game work, video game soundtracks as can you tell us a little bit about how that started for you guys or how you got into doing video game soundtracks?
Sure. A friend of mine named Jason Napolitano from Scarlet Moon Productions, he actually was the guy that got me connected to the whole video game area. And when we got to – I got an email or something from – a guy named Josh Fairhurst, who is the president of Mighty Rabbit Studios. And they're the production company that did Saturday Morning RPG. So, and Jason was the conduit to get a soundtrack out from that game. And really, we put there wasn't much of a budget on that project, so we chose music that was already written, and we edited up for the game. But the way that I personally got into the video game business was through Jason. Mm-hmm. Kenny, you want to add anything?
Yeah, I think, we composed a couple pieces of music, you know, fresh for the game. And then, so mainly their first contact with us, with Josh was, you know, to do some themes. And then, they were kind of at the ground floor on their project. So we just suggested, hey, we've got a bunch of music here that, we all own the rights to. And, why don't we put some stuff together that might be appropriate for the, for his project. And, we sent a bunch of stuff to him that he liked. So, they were just various pieces that Vince and I had done, from several different projects, so movie projects and, other type projects that we had done over, maybe a couple of years prior to that.
Sure. And did you, when you're choosing the music, did they send you rough cuts of the game so you kind of, knew what was going on or how long a level would last or did you?
I don't think they had that far along.
I
think what we did is send cues to Josh and he had it in mind what he wanted, and he picked the material from our list and listened to it and chose a couple of pieces. So we never did have anything to look at. He kind of laid it in, he laid it in the way he felt, his team laid it in the way they felt was best.
Sure.
I don't think we actually even saw any footage until the game was completed. So
right.
Did you play the old Angry Birds games? The previous ones, because this one's very different from the old ones.
I played a couple on my iPad just, at their suggestion. I hadn't played any before they Rovio contacted us, but, I figured, hey, we better have a look at what's going on here. And I think as far as other Angry Birds projects, as far as how they were laying it out, I think they kind of referenced Angry Birds Go as far as the format that they were going for and how the game would lay out.
Okay.
But we saw most of that stuff, we actually had some picture of the different game levels in progress that we compose too. And even though it's variable, so we weren't hitting picture all over the place, basically we just wanted to get something that, you know, drove what was going on, you know, within the gameplay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is that kind of similar to for Saturday Morning RPG? And I think that came out officially in 2012, but for PC gamers on Steam, it came out as recently as 2014. So I only played it last year. But anyway, when you were creating that game, was that kind of a similar deal? They didn't really have stuff to show you yet, and they just wanted the vibe that you guys bring to the music? Or did you kind of have an idea of it was going to be this fighting RPG game, and so you did more fighting music?
Well, I think that's the only thing we knew. That was Josh Fairhurst and Mighty Rabbit Studios. And Josh didn't have anything to show us, and we just picked music out of our existing library. And the only thing we did know that there was some fighting in the game. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, we definitely picked some fight music. That was a pretty aggressive soundtrack.
Yeah, most of the music for that one, a lot of it came from martial arts sci-fi independent film that Vince and I had worked on. I think in that movie there were like 25 fight scenes or something. So a lot of that music was real appropriate.
Are you referring to Sci-Fighter?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes. Good. I really wanted to talk to you guys about this movie. And the soundtrack, right? Because I actually was familiar with the soundtrack, which I didn't know was a soundtrack, before I knew about the movie itself.
Well, there's probably a reason for that.
I guess I'm calling it the soundtrack, but it's really an album, the Falling Off a Cliff album, right?
Right. That's a solo record of mine, and that was a really good opportunity for me to include the music from Sci-Fighter on that, so...
Yeah, it's really good music, and but I guess were they not going to release a soundtrack to the movie, and so you decided, well, this is another way to release it, or?
Well, if they did release a soundtrack, Kenny and I don't know anything about it.
No, I don't think they did.
They definitely didn't. That was actually a project for a real close friend of mine that I had done a lot of promo and commercial work for during his years at Warner Brothers, and this was kind of his first jump into, you know, a feature film type of production. So, it was sort of a payback because that was Bill Gottlieb and Gorilla Productions, I think was the name of the company. But Bill had been really, really good to me over the years, just bringing me a lot of Warner Brothers projects, you know, a lot of them that Vince and I even worked on. And so when he, you know, jumped into his first film project, you know, he kind of asked me about it. And I said, well, I'd do it, you know, if Vince and I could do it together, because we started working. That's around the time that we started working together quite often on projects. So you know, we dug into that. And, you know, it was a really low budget film. It wasn't the best of films, but it gave us a real good opportunity to work together. And it was a difficult film in that there really, really, you know, was a lot of music in the movie and so many fight scenes. So it was, mm-hmm. it was a lot of music to write in, like, you know, a fairly short amount of time.
Yep.
Right. And it's and the movie is kind of unusual in that, I mean, as soon as it starts, you realize this is more of an homage to karate championships, because all the characters, or all the actors, I guess, are like 2002, you know, MMA champion. They weren't actors otherwise, except for
exactly
the main characters. So
yeah,
so these are like fighters. It was like a movie made to showcase all these fighters, essentially. I mean,
right.
Yes. That was basically the whole, I think, objective around there. And, you know, Don the Dragon Wilson is actually Bill's brother. So that's how that connection got made, and how I think, you know, was part of the process of creating that movie. Mm-hmm. And but yeah, it was, you know, their whole idea was, you know, from the guy that directed all the choreography to all the people that were in there, they really tried to showcase, you know, a lot of different fighting styles, and got like the best people from all the different genres of fighting. And so, I mean, from that aspect, it's, you know, it might be an interesting movie for martial arts fans. And but, you know, basically Vince and I just got in it because, as I say, it was, you know, it was for a friend, you know, a friend's project. And, you know, it was something to for Vince and I to sink our teeth into and, you know, make some. We're actually pretty proud of that music. So,
it's really good music. I just have to say again, you know, that's a great album. And when you're watching the movie, I know it doesn't have a very high ranking on, you know, IMDb, but when you realize these people that are acting aren't really actors. They're, you know, fighters.
Right.
You know, you can forgive a little of that. And then,
that's right.
You know, and then you just, if you appreciate it in that format, like, oh, they're making this like fake video game, you know, get transferred into the game. I mean, it's kind of
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sort of a martial arts Tron kind of.
Yeah. And so when you look at it from that point of view, I was really entertained by it. But also because every time a song came on, I'm like, oh, I know what that song is. It's called Imaginary Ninjas. Oh, I guess these ninjas are imaginary. But and then they were, you know. So
yeah.
with the naming of the songs that you do, because, you know, for movies or whatever, do you always name them kind of to go with the scene? Is that just so you can keep track of where things go where or
you know what? I don't know. Kenny, do you know how we came up with the names?
I think it was an after thing, because usually when we're on a movie anyways, it's always Q1, Q2, Q3, Q4. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and the titles sometimes can be the hardest part of some of the process. You know, even with Angry Birds, we kind of did that too. It was sort of like, you know, we just had generic, not even generic names, but it was sort of like, you know, desert, you know, or map, you know. It's like they were totally whatever they called the piece of a video that they were working to or the game level. That's what the titles are, you know, of the songs in our computer. And then we go through, or in the case, we actually let Rovio go through and rename the tracks for the soundtrack.
Right.
Okay. When you're referring to them between each other, though, do you have to be like you're working on another project and you're like, you know what really work here? That segment from Map. I mean, how do you refer to the songs when you're
I'll tell you something about that. We got so confused. We were working on another project at the same time, another video game project. And the music, unfortunately, was very similar to both of these games. And Kenny and I definitely, we'd have to literally sit there and sift through the audio if we wanted to refer back to another piece. And we didn't even know which game it was from. So it was hard on that. It was hard to decipher. But we got through it. We figured out what we needed to get, and we went forward.
Yeah.
Yeah. And sometimes we just say, yeah, no, that one is, you know, like we're humming or doing something stupid. Or sometimes we get stupid names for the things too. Not that I can think of a specific example right now, but we'll get certain things that will just like, you know, the jazz dance thing or something like, you know, cause there'll be a piano figure in it or something that sounds like a 1960s beatnik movie or something, you know, like,
yeah.
We'll just, and there's probably even non-PG names that come up too that we call stuff. So,
yeah. Right. Depending on the mood you're in when you first name it or are trying to play it.
Yep. Yep. So,
there's a Kickstarter that recently was funded, and I saw that you guys are doing a track for it. It is the Nurin album, and it's going to be like a quasi VR. Like video or rock opera, right?
But right.
And why I say quasi VR, I mean it's capable of being used with the Oculus Rift headset if any of us had one yet. but as soon as we do, you know.
Yeah.
But can you talk a little bit about that? That sounds really very cool.
Well, that came to us again through Jason Napolitano from Scarlet Moon Productions. He actually picked some of the guest artists for the soundtrack to Saturday Morning RPG, and Jake Kaufman was one, who Kenny and I both really admire the work of Jake. Did some great stuff, and he contacted Jason because he wanted to work with us on that project. And we're really looking forward to that. We heard one piece that Jake himself composed, and it's fantastic. And so we're going to be collaborating with Jake on a piece of music.
Cool. And are you going to be able to see, or I guess, will they, do you know if they'll create the graphical portion? You know, it's going to be visual as well. Are they going to create that after you send them your track, or are they sending you like, hey, can you work on the dark cityscape portion?
Yeah, we're not really sure. All we know so far on that one is that, you know, Vince, Jake, and I are going to get in a room and, you know, work together for a couple of days, and then pretty much, you know, Vince and I'll go off and do our thing, and Jake will do his thing on finishing up, you know, pieces of the music. So I don't know whether, I know there is a whole video aspect to it, so I don't know whether that's, you know, where that fits in the process, whether we'll actually be working to some picture, or, you know, it'll just be explained to us, whether it's storyboards. We're not really sure how that's going to progress at this point. We just know they got the Kickstarter funded, and it looks like an interesting project. So, and it should be fun. Jake, we actually did an online interview with Jake's thing at one point in time. And, you know, he's a pretty cool and crazy guy. So it should be fun.
Yeah.
Awesome. You know, so this song is going to have a video associated with it. And you guys have done a lot of movie soundtracks. And now video game soundtracks. When you're watching movies, I don't know if they send you rough cuts or something that you can watch, and then you're creating a song for a scene, like Sci-Fighter, you know, it's another fight scene, you have to make another song. Do you ever worry about making the song too good, so the song really overshadows the scene, like too catchy? You know what I mean?
That's a good question. Kenny, I'm going to point to you, field that one.
You know, both Vince and I are big movie fans, big moviegoers, and I think, you know, while we like, you know, a lot of music from a lot of different composers, you know, I don't think either one of us is very, if we find ourselves watching a movie, which we usually get pretty engulfed in, each of us, if we find ourselves listening to the music, then it wasn't really that good of a score. I think that's kind of, you know, I think we both have that kind of mentality about that. So it depends. Some stuff, you know, and especially a lower budget movie, they want to wallpaper, you know, the whole movie with music. So, which is kind of a drag, because it can kind of have the effect of taking away from the impact of the music. You know, sometimes not having music in it, you know, makes it, when the music come in, it gives it more of an emotional lift. So, so it's kind of hard to do on a lower budget film, because, you know, they don't have all the big expense for, you know, computer graphics and, you know, maybe the sound design and sound effects and things like that. So they tend to try to cover that up by using a lot of music.
Sure.
And so, you know, I don't think, obviously, if it's under dialogue, we're definitely really aware that we don't want to, you know, get in the way of that, you know, in any way. But the action stuff, you know, we can be as loud and as obnoxious as, you know, we possibly can be, because the bottom line is they're going to turn it down anyways. And, you know, it's always the guys that mix movies are usually more part of the sound effects team. So they tend to play up that stuff a lot better, you know? So,
right.
So, you know, in a fight scene, we're never going to be, you know, do anything as obtruse as like a punch that sounds like somebody hit you with you know, a Mack truck or whatever, you know, the sound, or an explosion or all that kind of stuff.
The sound guys, all they just turn up the Foley artist, right? So got the guy smacking the thing of ham or whatever for the
the side of beef or something. So the only time we really have to worry about that is if it's you know, if it's a real underscore kind of a dialogue scene that's, you know, emotional or something like that. But, you know, we tend to it's funny because, you know, a lot of guys know Vince for, you know, the action and the big over the top movie. But, you know, Vince is brilliant at like just basically piano. You know, we've done some things, just piano, acoustic guitar, soft strings or something, that I think is some of our favorite stuff, but you know, nobody really plays that up because, you know, they're aware of Transformers and Rocky and so but I think we do that stuff really, really well. And hopefully we can get a few projects that, you know, that kind of move in that direction, just to have another kind of avenue of a musical outlet.
Yeah. And that brings me to a question about in the '80s, you probably had, you know, you had to do a lot of the instruments and then record that, I guess, on tape, but now you have, what did you use in the '80s versus now? And what are the differences? What do you not have to worry about anymore?
Well, back in the days of Transformers and Rocky IV, we had a lot of keyboards, but we didn't have any computers at the time. And there were devices called sequencers available, but we really didn't use those. It was pretty much recorded live with instruments, except for some keyboard overdubs. We went in with a live rhythm section, bass guitar, drums, and keyboard, like a piano, grand piano. And we laid that down first, four guys in a room together, which was really nice. And I think I speak for Kenny when I say that we miss that to a great degree. Today with the computers, it enables you to, you know, write together, collaborate together over the internet, which I'm not a particular big fan of. I think Kenny and I really love the fact that we can be in a room together and create together. But the big difference now is the computers allow you so many options. It's a good thing and a bad thing. We have these sound libraries that are just so extensive that you could literally spend for one sound, to build one sound, you could spend a whole day or two just sifting through sounds, and each one of them, it's gotten to a point where each one of them is so good that it can be a very time-consuming process. So, you know, the big difference is it's easier now today in one way with the technology. It was quicker, actually. To me, it was quicker back in the days of the 80s with just being forced to move forward without relying on a computer. We had to play. We had to play well. We had to choose good players. And it was, you know, because of the schedules on both of the big movies that I've done, I didn't have it. I don't know if I could have done it with a computer at this point. It might have taken just too long. So in one way, having the deadlines, the tough deadlines that I did, propelled me to just, you know, rely on the talent of the people I was working with at the time.
Mm-hmm. Is it like almost you have too much granularity to the sound, so you can get analysis paralysis in ways?
Oh yeah,
you know,
we call it option anxiety. You know, it's too many options now today. But Kenny and I actually have gotten to a point where we're moving pretty quickly with the computers, and I think both of us, you know, we're very careful to make the rhythm section sound like it was played by guys in the same room at the same time.
Mm-hmm. And is there anything that you just can't do with computers? I mean, maybe you choose not to do some stuff with computers, but is there any sounds that, you know, you just go, this can't be done with computers yet? I'm kind of thinking like, you know, guitar riffs and stuff. But I'm just wondering, is there anything you just choose to use the instrument in the studio no matter what?
Boy, that's a tough question. You know, the only thing that comes to my mind is in the area of synthesizers, and that is that the companies that are making analog synthesizer replicas in the computer, they're getting better, but there's still something missing compared to the old, like on Rocky IV and Transformers. My friend Casey Young did the synth programming, and he had, I mean, it was like a toy store. I had a room full of synthesizers that was, I listened back to that stuff, and there is a difference. I can't pinpoint what it is, but there's much more presence, much more power to using a real Moog modular synthesizer. They're getting much better. Arturia is one of the companies that's doing these old analog synthesizer replicas, and they are definitely getting close to the sound, but the essence is not quite the same as the actual unit itself. But we're fortunate in that Kenny is a great guitar player. So as far as guitar riffs, and I love guitar. I mean, I always say to Kenny, I'm a frustrated guitar player. So anything that I play as far as lead synth is usually based on how I think a guitar player would phrase it. So the thing with Kenny and I that works so great is if we're doing a guitar or a synth solo, we usually end up combining the two and harmonizing and playing it like, I would play the synthesizer like a guitar, and of course Kenny's got the great talent and the tone, so we work really well together. We both love keyboards and guitar, and it's a great thing because Kenny's the guitar player and I'm the keyboard player, so we're very competitive and compatible is the word I was looking for. So yeah, it worked really well.
Also, besides keyboards, Vince is like, has a real big background. He's a great drummer. And our programmed drum beats aren't really programmed. They're actually performed. So that even though it'll most likely be performed on a keyboard, it's still performed by a guy that could actually sit down and play that beat on a drum kit. And same with me with doing like the drum programming is like, Vince and I came up in an era where we played a lot of live music and, we've sat next to, some guy beating on some drums with a crash cymbal, 2 inches from your head. And after years of doing that, you kind of know how a drummer plays. So, there's like some giveaways in a lot of music now by guys that it's easy to program drums, but to program correctly, you kind of got to know that the drummer doesn't have eight arms and, and that he's going to stop playing this part to play this part, and that's what makes it very realistic. Now, especially in like some of this Angry Bird stuff that we did just finished this last year, the drumming is really, really over the top. We found that they really, really like crazy drums. So, it would take a really good drummer to play some of that stuff. And, that's the beauty of some of the modern technology is that, we can kind of finesse stuff around here, and improve the performance. And, but most of the stuff, we don't really program that much stuff. We actually just play it in and use the computer just like we would, use a tape recorder years ago. I think that's a big difference that I hear, between how some other people do stuff and how we do it. And it's probably why we sound like we do, a big reason why we sound like we do, for good or for better or worse,
So sound it kind of like the percussion version of the Uncanny Valley. Like they can you can program drums, but it doesn't it's not quite the same as a human playing it. Kind of like a
That's good.
graphical representation of a human, no matter how good it looks, something's off,
Right.
right? And you're just kind of queased out by it.
That's
So
yeah. And I mean, where it really becomes different having the computer is that, we can really pinpoint and do some ridiculous fills, which, really makes the music, especially the game stuff here, really exciting. And, if you actually had a live drummer going through a whole song and playing some of the fills that we do and some of the cues, it's like, the guy need an 8-hour nap after he got done with
Sure. So,
Yeah.
to bring it back to like the 80s music then, like the Rocky training montage,
Yeah.
right? Super famous song. I'm sure everybody tells you it's on their workout mix
Yeah.
because
Right.
it
Yep.
is, right? It's on all of our workout
Right.
mix. But I do have a different story of using that song. I was at a convention. It was a small convention in Iowa, and they were doing a hot wing eating contest.
Okay.
And to like get people psyched up to eat hot wings, they played the training
Oh my
montage
gosh.
song. So, in the usually it's used for to get people in shape, but sometimes that song can actually be used to get you fatter or what we call in the Midwest training. But I mean that's such a fantastic song and everybody knows it and it psychs you up so well.
Right. That's the most unique usage I've heard for training montage.
I figured that would be unusual for but as soon as when I heard it I was there I was like, "Oh man, everybody's getting psyched up." to eat hot wings.
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
I'd like to see synchronized swimming done to it, maybe.
Really aggressive synchronized swimming.
Right.
So for the Transformers stuff, now do both of you sometimes go to BotCon or the Transformers conventions?
Well, I have. Kenny hasn't had the luxury yet, but I have a feeling it's in our future here because of maybe the Angry Bird stuff and
next year.
Maybe we'll get invited to one together. And I always say to Kenny, you really have to see these things to believe them. It's surreal in one way. It's very, very gratifying because the fans are so dedicated. It's really a big part of their lives, and it's interesting to see. And there's certainly many worse things that kids could be into these days. So I'm very appreciative of how dedicated they are, and the fans actually know more about my music in the original movie probably at this point than I do. I mean, literally, you know. Mm-hmm. I hope that Kenny gets the opportunity to go with me to one of these conventions at some point. I don't know what we'll be invited to, but we'll certainly, we'll certainly field any requests.
Right. I'm sure that there'll be something happening next year because it'll be the 30th anniversary.
Ah, right.
Transformers, right?
So, right.
That's right.
Yeah. So I would expect probably they'll probably get something in 2016.
Well, the last convention, now Kenny did play with me at a convention 2007 at Paramount Studios, and that was a lot of fun. We got up on stage, and I think we played like three pieces, one of which was a medley we had put together, a new medley at that time that we had put together of Transformers music. And we performed that. We performed a piece with my friend Rick Livingstone called Bound and Gagged, which was a song that I had submitted long time ago for the live action movie, the first one. Mm-hmm. And I loved that experience. There was a lot of people. The fans were just so appreciative and excited. And it was fun playing it in that kind of setting and actually performing it live. Now, we had some things on a backing track because it came together so quickly. We didn't really have the time or the budget to put a band together, but Kenny and I played all our parts live, and it had a great energy hearing it, you know, that loud and in a great live setting like that. So that was our last experience with a BotCon convention.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
That'd be real interesting to, you know, we've got another, a newer Transformer medley even than that we did for, Chris Hulsbeck, what was that? The
Turrican.
The Turrican soundtrack. Yeah, that's right. That was kickstarted as well.
That would be a piece. Maybe somebody will ask us if we can do that with a live orchestra. That would be a riot.
That would be the best. That would actually. We'd love that.
I might retire after that.
I wanted to ask you when you said orchestra. The album, just a quick jump back to this, to the Falling Off a Clef album.
Okay.
So now you guys were saying you don't really name your songs individually, but you do name that album. So, and it's got like music puns in it, right? Do you find yourself wanting to use musical puns in song names at all or album names?
See, I can't remember again who named those tracks for the movie. Kenny?
For the movie,
like Falling Off a Clef, right?
Which was the soundtrack to Sci-Fighter, pretty much.
Yeah,
I think you named those.
I don't know how I would have gone about it, but
sure.
Yeah, because I think wasn't that the one that you wanted to take that to one of the Transformer conventions, wasn't it?
Let's see, did I? I can't remember.
Because that has a lot of the Sci-Fighter stuff on it, right?
Yeah,
right.
Most of the record is Sci-Fighter stuff.
Yeah, because I think, from what I recall, that was one of those where you got asked to go to another convention, and you usually prepped a CD for those conventions.
Right. That's, you're right.
Yeah. And then I think you just said, you know what, I'll just use the new medley, but like, you know, let's use some stuff that we did on SciFighter.
That's right.
And off you went to it. So yeah, you must have given them all titles at some point.
I mean, a title like Imaginary Ninjas, I would never thought up. I don't know where that came from. But
I assumed you must have been watching the movie and gone, oh, this is where the imaginary ninja, there's a scene where they can run through a bunch of ninjas that are circling them, and they just have to believe.
That could very well be. We didn't get it from Bill, the director, I don't think.
The names, because I filled out the cue sheets on those movies, so maybe I gave some of them titles. I would have given them all titles just to put on a cue sheet, but mm-hmm. that doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, those things might have been named three different names by the time, because they've been used on a couple of different soundtracks or, compilations that we've done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, the movie itself actually has two titles, right? If you search for SciFighter, you won't find it on Amazon.
Yeah, they did rename that at some point from the original.
Do you know if they have to do that? Because all through the movie, they have like SciFighter on the screen, and the little video game box says SciFighter, and it's SciFighter everywhere. And then
I don't know what the motivation was behind that, changing the name.
Yeah.
I have a feeling it had something to do with the, the distribution and who owned that, and whether it's, maybe it got sold into a distribution channel, worldwide, and they might have retitled it for that.
Sure.
I'm not sure. I never really asked Bill about that.
Yeah, it's just kind of an interesting thing. If you're searching for it, it's called Extreme Fighter.
Right.
With an X, not EX.
Right.
An X hyphen. So, it's more, I guess.
It might have even just been a change for, a marketing reason with European, with foreign distributors or something. They might have just decided, like, God, this'll sell better in our country. So they changed the name.
Right. Move it down on the alphabetical list.
Yeah, very far down.
Yeah.
More movies with X in the title.
That's right. Yeah.
So we're at the point in the podcast where I want to do the Vorpal Chainsword Quiz Blast, where I just ask you a series of seven questions and you answer as best you can. Since there's two of you, it's going to be the Vorpal Quiz Blast Off, where it'll be a competition. So I'll ask Vince a question and then I'll ask Kenny a question. Okay. You may think some of these questions sound very ridiculous, but I promise you they've been scientifically evaluated for quality beforehand. All right. So, question number one. Vince, you are stranded on an island with only one synthesizer. Which one do you bring along?
I would say the Nord Stage 2 piano.
All right. I'm marking that. That is a correct answer.
Wow.
Kenny, you are stranded on a mountaintop with only one guitar. Which one do you bring with you?
Probably be my 58 Martin 0018 acoustic guitar.
Nice. And that is also, so far, you guys both fully 100%. That's what I mean.
Okay.
All right. Question number two. Which is the better classic Angry Bird? This is for Vince. The speedy yellow canary or the green boomerang puffin thing? I don't know if it's a penguin or a puffin, but it's green.
The green boomerang thing.
It is. You're picking the green boomerang thing?
Yep.
That is the right answer.
Good.
Kenny.
Do you even know what the green boomerang thing is? That would be the better question.
Yeah. Right. I'll need to research that on the internet later. Kenny, which is the better classic Angry Bird? The white bird that drops exploding eggs? Or the blue one that splits into three littler bluebirds?
The one that drops the exploding egg.
Yes, of course, because exploding eggs are always better. So, also correct answer. All right, Vince.
Yeah.
You wake up in the middle of the night because you hear a noise downstairs. You head downstairs with a baseball bat and find what's making the noise. What would you rather see in your kitchen? A ghost or a velociraptor?
A ghost.
Yes, that's the right answer. Because a velociraptor you have to deal with immediately.
Absolutely.
Right, a ghost may just disappear. And, you know, yeah, velociraptors can follow you upstairs. Okay, or through doorways, too. All right, Kenny, you wake up in the middle of the night and hear a noise outside. You get up and look out the window. What would you rather see in the street? The Stay Puft Marshmallow Man or Pennywise the Dancing Clown?
I'm going to go with the Stay Puft.
Yes.
Clowns are evil.
They are, especially when they're played by Tim Curry in the movie It.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Pennywise is creepy. So, wow, you guys are doing quite well so far. Okay. 100%. All right. Vince, which Transformer do you most identify with?
Oh, boy, that's a tough one. I would say Optimus Prime.
Optimus Prime is a good answer, but the correct answer is Soundwave.
Oh, okay.
He's the Ghetto Blaster one.
Okay.
Okay. Kenny, which Transformer do you most identify with? And you can't choose Soundwave.
I was just going to go Soundwave. Optimus Prime. I'd go with that one, too.
Optimus Prime is a good answer, but the correct answer is Blaster. The other tape deck Transformer.
Right.
The good one. The Autobot.
Okay.
All right. So we are at question number 5. Vince, which is the best Rush album, 2112 or Moving Pictures?
Moving Pictures.
Moving Pictures. I'm going to have to go with 2112 on that.
Oh, okay.
As the best Rush album.
Okay.
Of course, somehow I'm claiming that I have more authority on that subject than you, but I don't.
You probably do. You probably have more knowledge of the band than I do.
All right, Kenny, which is the best Rush album, Hemispheres or Fly By Night?
Which one had Freebird on it?
Freebird?
Which one had Freebird on it? Let's see. What were the two choices again?
Which is the best Rush album, Hemispheres or Fly By Night?
Fly By Night.
That's a good answer, but the correct answer is 2112. Which is the best Rush album.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. We're on question number 6. Vince, you find a dimension jumping portal device. You have an opportunity to travel to an alternate dimension and collaborate with an alternate version of yourself who is specialized in an alternate type of music. Who would you collaborate with? Reggae music Vince or bluegrass Vince?
Oh, neither one, but. Let's see, probably of the two, reggae.
Reggae events, yes. And that's the correct answer.
Good.
Kenny, you find a dimension-jumping portal device. You have an opportunity to travel to an alternate dimension and collaborate with an alternate version of Vince. Who would you choose, reggae Vince or bluegrass Vince?
Let's see. I'd go bluegrass Vince.
Really? Actually. Bluegrass Vince. Changing it up. All right. Yeah. Well, like you both got that one right. Amazing.
That's good. Great questions.
All right. Finally, the 7th question is for you both simultaneously. What was the most heartbreaking moment of the 1980s? The death of Apollo Creed or the death of Optimus Prime?
Apollo Creed.
Apollo Creed.
I'd have to go that too.
Really? Both of you went with Apollo Creed.
I'm sure we got that wrong.
You did. I'm sorry. But that's only because, as a devastated 8-year-old, Optimus Prime's death, hit me a lot harder. But
right.
Apollo Creed was very sad.
That was very sad.
Well, it looks like you both got 6 out of 7 right, so that's good.
That's good.
And thank you so it's a tie. I might have to go back and reevaluate the questions to make sure I did the scoring right. But thank you for both taking the Vorpal quiz blast off.
That's good. That was very good. Thank you.
Yeah, you bet. All right. So now I want to ask you about perhaps do you have any mystery projects on the horizon that you are working on that you could give us any tantalizing clues about?
Oh boy, we have something that we're working on right now. It's a big secret, and I don't even know what clue. I'm trying to think even of a very difficult clue.
I would say the only clue would be fans of Vince's will love it.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Is there any kind of timeline where we should perk up our ears more looking for it to reveal itself that you know of, or not yet?
We don't know yet, but I would say within the next 6 months, probably sooner than that, but I'm at the outside.
Okay.
Yeah. We're not exactly sure when their end will be finished, but probably I'd say, 3 to 6 months.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Well, that's good. That's exciting. And that'll be,
we're really excited about it too. So it's a new company for us. So yeah, it's going to be fun.
Yeah. And when I see it appear, I will be sure to put it on the podcast page at the top. So everybody knows who's listening to this will know what we're talking about.
Great. Thank you for that.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And to finish up, is there anything you guys think should have a greater audience, either your work or something you really like that maybe people aren't aware of and could be made more aware of?
The only thing that comes to mind, and it's not out yet, it's not even recorded yet, is Kenny and I have some dramatic material that we've been working on, and it's way different from things that I've done in the past, and I think it's the area that Kenny and I would love to head in next. We're both big fans of many composers. One in particular that I feel is the best dramatic composer is Thomas Newman. And he's done so many movies, but one was Road to Perdition. And I keep going back to that record, and just as a piano player, I just love how he composes and how he features grand piano and orchestra and all that stuff. But I think that dramatic material that we're going to record and hopefully find an outlet for is something that I would suggest fans be on the lookout for.
Okay. And probably check out the Roads to Perdition music while they're waiting for it.
Absolutely. Right. Anything by Thomas Newman.
Okay.
Yeah. Just fantastic. That, and we're working on a Stutter Hits of the 70s collection with my Sharona, my generation. Anything that had stunners in it, we're gonna do a cover album of those.
Oh, we have to think of a good name for the Stutter Hits album. So it's exciting. You could have if you did an orchestral remake of Scarface music, you could say cello to my little friend.
There you go.
It's like pulling off a clef, right? It's kind of stays in that theme.
Right.
1970s. I have to think about that one. Anyway.
Very good.
Well, I want to thank you both very much for coming on the show, and I really appreciate it. And I look forward to seeing your next projects, or listening to your next projects, and seeing
thank you.
The other stuff.
Thank you. So, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, thanks a lot, and you guys have a great weekend.
You too, Corey.
All right.
You too, Corey. Thank you.
Yep.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.